Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Darkwing Duck, or Batman the Animated Series?
Batman the Animated Series.
Gonna have to agree.
Though, okay, so I'm torn a little bit, though, because I had a Darkwing Duck watch growing up, where his cape opened up and then showed the time, and it was... I really wish I had that watch. And I had a TMNT water bottle that I still used when I worked at a summer camp, even though the paint was fading off on my hand. But Batman the Animated Series, like...
I mean, it's iconic.
It's iconic. It has the best voice acting. It has the best animation. I still watch it. Unashamedly.
True. We all do, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good.
It is. Maybe that wasn't a good comparison.
It's okay. I mean, those are all really iconic cartoons. They're all great cartoons.
To be fair, on my end, my parents weren't super into TMNT, so they didn't really let me watch it.
Were they against turtles?
I think
that
they were,
common Christian stance,
yeah,
being
right.
Against
anti-turtle.
Turtles.
You have to be a fish person if you're a Christian, and so turtles, turtles are sketch. Turtles are out there. That's you're pushing the boundaries of good.
That's
conservative
the
Christendom.
Less than or equal to fish.
That also gives me an opportunity to be really into carbs and be like, okay, so here's the thing. I'm a Christian. I can only eat bread and wine, yeah. And that's all I'm allowed to eat. I'm really sorry. It's a faith thing.
Yeah, right. I
mean, unless you have celiac.
Well, then I guess you can't be a Christian.
This is getting all sorts of problematic real fast.
Sorry, Elizabeth,
all of the private
our sister-in-law,
want to hire me right now.
No doubt.
Every church is like, yes, go on.
Yes. I'm sorry, you two are either in or recently graduated from seminary?
Yes, you, Christian feminist, we want you. You've got some interesting ideas, and we definitely want to let you preach. That we were iffy before, but you took that stance, and we now are very interested.
Every Sunday is like... the fish and the loaves. The bread of life. Just whatever specific scriptures you can pull bread out of. That's all you
preach.
Oh,
dear. My goodness, we haven't even heard Kyle's answer yet.
No
I'm still working through it.
It's now irrelevant.
So, yeah, right. So, TMNT didn't work because I never got to watch it.
Unleavened promises.
Get out. It's my church. Get your own church. Yeah, you can be the fish church. You and Kyle can be the fish church. I get the bread church. The bread and wine church is mine.
It's my bubbles. I have the salmons and the fishes, so they're my bubbles.
Okay. Okay, Dory. You were saying, Kyle.
I was saying.
Now I am actually interested in what Kyle was going to say.
Sure. When I start talking, you ignore me. Burr, 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 burr.
Well, I wasn't given the choice between you or I. I mean, it's not like she married you or anything. What do you think we became friends? She's just like, oh,
I need
Alan's
an ally
voice all the time. I need somebody else
to just not speak around.
Yeah, that's true.
It's okay if I come over and just not talk.
Yeah,
like just sit in silence for a second.
Anyway,
Alan's giving me the biggest death glare as he slowly pulls off his wedding band.
Oh, man. Things are getting
attempting
real.
To make fish noises
so
in the microphone.
Darkwing Duck.
Right.
Was also, I think, like, just enough before my time that, like, I only caught it at, like, the 10, 11 o'clock at night on Disney Channel, like,
so, hold
reruns
on. You said
thing.
It's before your time?
Like, just a touch, I think.
Why don't you just twist the dagger a little bit more? That's fine. I can take it. I'm resilient.
It's not my fault you guys happen to have a couple years on me.
It's fine, it's just my kidney.
I can keep going. We can get the liver, the spleen, all those other body parts we talked about like way back in the first episode.
Yep.
It's a big old callback.
Yeah, big old callback.
Yeah, you noobs out there are going to have to do
your
homework.
Doofy first joke that we ever made.
What joke do we make that isn't doofy?
That's fair.
That is a fair point. So, yep. Darkwing Duck was just a little bit before.
Yep. which, as I recall, but I barely have any memory of it, I enjoyed. But yeah, Batman the Animated Series is just like, well, yeah, is it? Yeah.
So
obvious choice.
I definitely agree. Of the three, Batman the Animated Series, just hands down. Now, granted, I also didn't get to watch it. That was not one that was really allowed because it was pretty violent. So, Darkwing Duck will forever have a special place in my heart. And I would have to ask my older brother, but for some reason, I seem to remember running around and acting like Darkwing Duck as a child.
This shocks me not.
I can picture it, and I haven't known you nearly as long as she has.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I just always latched onto latched onto the lich. Roll for initiative, folks. We just brought liches into it. Liches, not stitches.
Big problem.
Okay.
Big problem.
Speaking of stitches, I have a question. It's been bugging me all week. Actually, 2 weeks now. And I don't know how to ask it without... It's not an important question.
Oh, boy.
It has no bearing in reality.
Which means it's going to tear us apart.
Yes. But it does bother me. Okay, so Stitch, the Disney character Stitch.
Okay.
We're tracking. Uh-huh. Yes.
Following.
Okay.
Yep. My spirit animal.
He was. Okay, so this is perfect for you. So he was in prison before he came to Earth, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So did he get his name by being a snitch? That is my question.
Why is that your question?
Because snitches get stitches.
Ah, there we go. Now we're back around.
So that is my question for you and for anyone listening. That has been bugging me. That is what's been puzzling me for weeks now. Because I don't think we get a clear backstory.
No, not much. I mean, beyond the fact that, like, yeah, Jumba created this illegal experiment and then, like, somehow they found out about it. And then,
he was probably the snitch.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Like,
so he got stitches.
Stitch snitched himself out.
There you go.
He got himself arrested because he's like, I know how I'm going to get out of this situation. I'm
Mystery
just going to blow the top off this whole operation.
Mystery solved. Thank you, Kyle.
You're welcome.
I can sleep at night now.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Glad to hear it.
It's absurd the things that keep you up at night.
I understand. Mm-hmm. I too have. I remember when I was in middle school spending like 3 days straight just dumbfounded because one of my friends walked up to me and he said, hey, Kyle, try and contemplate nothingness. And I sat there for a minute and I just kept, you know, like, oh,
this
giant,
was in high school?
Empty. No, this is middle school.
What random middle schooler just walks up to you and like, hey, you know what's fun to think about? Nothing.
Shout out to my friend Ryan McCaskill.
Ryan McCaskill, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? Do you need help? Do you need a hug?
I think this was more an intentional, targeted effort to take me apart for 4 or 5 days.
That's also
effective.
Some psychopathic stuff. A middle schooler targeting
what?
A close friend,
okay,
being like, you know what will undo him? A contemplation on nothingness.
But we're talking
target
about
acquired
middle schoolers. Like, what isn't like absolutely destructive coming
but
from
that's,
them?
That's psychological. It's not like I'm going to burn some anthills. I'm going to kick over your blocks. That's I'm going to tear you apart from the inside, and I am 9.
And friends circles and 9.
Oh wait,
how
you
many?
Said middle school. I
middle
was thinking
school,
elementary school.
Not
sorry.
Elementary school. Yeah, no.
Still though. 12, 13, that's still weird. If a 12-year-old came up to me and was like, hey, have you thought about contemplating nothingness today? It'd be like, get away from me. Take 5 steps back. I don't want to talk to you. In fact, you know what? You stay there. I'm going to get another adult. And I'm gonna get some salt and pour a circle around me. Because you might be a witch or something. I don't know. I would just be
And we're
like,
back to liches.
And we're back to liches.
I'd be doing the Lord's Prayer and just like... crosses and I'd be freaked out. This is why I can't have kids.
I feel like that comes up like every week. Yeah. That joke comes up every week.
Because they mostly terrify me.
Mostly.
Have you ever read like the Reddit forums about things that kids have woken their parents up with?
No, I have not.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Care to
really
give an example?
Stuff. Oh, gosh. I don't... Oh, like if I took your face off, what would be underneath your skin? That kind of stuff. Like that level of messed up. Like, even I remember being a weird kid around that age. Like, I remember distinctly in elementary school being convinced my parents were aliens and being like, it's okay, you can take off your masks. I just want to know. Like, I just want to be certain, and it's totally cool if you're from another planet. I would just like to be, I just want to know. Like, let's stop lying to each other. I remember saying this to my mom, and she's like, why do you think we're aliens, you weird child? I'm really grateful she still loves me. But yeah, that's the kind of stuff.
See, I was on the flip side of that dynamic, where by the time I was like 5, I was busily telling my family at the dinner table every night stories about how I was an exchange student from Mars, and the real Kyle was there with my Martian family, and I had a spaceship that was invisible hiding in the backyard. So, that train sailed like 10 years early for me.
This is when you guys were 5?
When I was like
roughly
5.
Yeah, like I would have had Harry Potter been around when I was that young, I probably would have been like, I'm the muggle in my family, probably. Like, I wouldn't have assumed I was the magical one. I'd be like, I'm the one that's a squib in a house full of wizards and witches.
Well, that's depressing.
I have a lot of confidence, you guys.
I'm trying to think what I would have been doing and thinking about at 5. And I'm reasonably sure it would have consisted of, when am I going to eat my daily hot dog? Because I lived on hot dogs for a year.
Who didn't?
Me, I didn't.
Followed by...
That's because there's clearly something wrong with you. It's carried over into adulthood.
Followed by...
That might be the root of the problem.
that I didn't eat enough hot dogs?
Right.
The thing that everyone links to cancer. You know what's wrong with you? You didn't consume enough carcinogens as a child.
Well, duh.
Yeah.
Have to be set apart from the rest of us. Vegetarian, no hot dogs. Burp, 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 burp.
Yep, there's that triangle of pretension again.
Yep, just all resides within me, within this heart.
So anyway, Alan, you were discussing hot dogs in childhood.
I was just thinking, the only other thing that probably would have been on my mind was, how loud can I scream because I need more sugar? That's probably, I consumed a lot of sugar at that age.
See, this is how introverts secretly run the world, because we don't talk about what our plans are. We just carry them out quietly because we know no one will pay attention to us because we look like we're behaving. Mm-hmm. You guys, though, extroverts of the world, yell the entire time you do something. I'm editing a podcast. I'm going to create a vlog. I'm playing a video game. Yeah, point taken.
We just totally freaked out the podcasts. They came running. They're like, what is happening?
Like, what's wrong? Who died?
It's okay. It's okay,
so, yeah,
Betty.
So while you're screaming about eating hot dogs and taking over the world, we're actually busily doing so.
Right. Although now I really just want a hot dog and mac and cheese.
We just ate dinner.
Yes.
I know, but even so.
This is important. Were those individual things or was that a combined meal?
Individual. Chopping up hot dogs and putting it into the mac and cheese.
You're fired. You're done with the podcast.
You're out.
Your friendship is ended.
Well, then I guess we need a divorce because I don't remember.
It's okay. Not remembering is chalked up to bad memory. Willingly choosing...
That's literally the definition of not remembering.
But willingly choosing to not consume macaroni and cheese and hot dogs and they not be in the same pot? Blasphemy.
I mean, I've done it before. It's not like it's the worst thing.
Don't talk about it like it's being asked to eat your vegetables.
No, I like eating my vegetables. I also loved eating broccoli as a kid, and I still love eating broccoli. Like, straight up raw broccoli, too.
Raw broccoli. He's hardcore.
Hardcore.
You both can go home.
I am home. I literally reside nowhere else.
You are done with podcasting. Go to bed.
You don't know. I'll just start a new one.
Yeah, probably. But who will edit it?
It'll just be really poorly edited. Right. It'll be edited, just no one will be able to tell.
So hey everybody, this is the MinMax podcast. I hope everyone is having a wonderful day, evening, existence.
Existence pretty much covers it.
Existence. I think it's a good one.
We hope your stay on Earth has been pleasant.
You're now precluding all of our extraterrestrial audience.
I'm sorry, guys. Do you guys know my parents, by the way?
Or have you seen the real Kyle? I kind of lost touch with him about 20 years ago. I'm a little concerned. I think his family might want him back.
Oh, goodness. So speaking of identity and having family and groups you identify with.
Roll right into it, girl.
Mm-hmm. I'm just, see that transition? It's like I teach this stuff.
Like a pro.
Like a pro. So today we're talking about an article that had been suggested to us by our friends at Imaginopolis in Indianapolis, Indiana. Sorry, that's a mouthful. Imaginopolis in Indianapolis, Indiana.
Say that one 5 times fast.
No, I refuse. You're not the boss.
Imaginopolis in Indianapolis, Indiana. Imaginopolis in Indiana.
You're not even saying the words fully. You just kind of gave up.
Imaginopolis in Indiana.
No, stop. Enough. You're done. Anyway.
Okay, that's done.
After that. So, this article is called Christian Comic-Con, The Geeks Shall Inherit the Earth. Written by Eric Sundrup, and this was written in August, but it was later August, and it was a really interesting article about this Christian geek conference. So if any of you have been to a con before, you know exactly what these are like. You go, there are a lot of, you know, art booths, and there are often little mini breakout sessions with writers panels or actor panels, workshops and things. There's usually a floor just for people to show off their cosplay costumes. There are a lot of different things you can do, and they're held in big convention centers and hotels, and they're a lot of fun. Kyle, have you been to one? I forget.
I have not.
Okay, you haven't. Alan and I have really only been to one. Mm-hmm. We really want to go to more. We loved the one that we went to. We went to Wizard World Chicago, and we went with my brother and his girlfriend, and it was and our friend Nick and his daughter Henry, and it was so much fun. We met a lot of people.
It was a blast.
My brother and I dressed up like Rosalind and Robert Lutice from Bioshock Infinite. Alan, you dressed up as Booker.
I was Booker.
From Bioshock Infinite. Amy, my brother's girlfriend, she dressed up as Fiona from Adventure Time. And then my brother was dressed up like Robert. So we had a lot of people stop my brother and I because, you know, we were dressed up as these twins / same person from different iterations of the same universe, and so people who were really familiar with Bioshock Infinite wanted to flip the coin we were carrying around and wanted to talk to us about the game and how it inspired them, which was really interesting. We impromptu entered a costume contest, which we definitely did not win. There were so many better costumes. We just really liked ours, and other people apparently liked ours. We met the sister of one of the game designers from Bioshock, and he designed our characters, the Lutice twins are his favorite characters. So she like talked to us specifically and asked us some questions about it and like took a picture of us to send to him because she knew that he would really appreciate it, which again was a really awesome moment. Like, oh, our costumes were cool enough to impress you who are like very familiar with this world.
Right. She was so excited.
Yeah, she was so excited. It was really flattering. It was also really endearing for her to make it a point to talk to us about that. You meet other cosplayers, and we had a lot of group photos with people who were dressed up from things from other Bioshocks. So that was a lot of fun, and it can be a really great time for people who are into one thing a lot to get together with other people who are also obsessed with that thing and to have, you know, commiserate about that. So it can be a really great time for, you know, getting together and feeling like you're identified with, like people get you. So that's why this idea of this Christian Comic-Con is really interesting to me. And they described it as being a very intimate, small con. It's a pretty specific niche thing. It's you're a geek and you're also a practicing Christian. Like you're narrowing it and narrowing it and I can't complain because my own thesis topic is pretty narrow as well. It's Christians, but hey, theater too, maybe. So I get that like desire to kind of narrow in on something really specific and address that. But I find it really interesting to have this space where you're celebrating your faith, but you're also celebrating what also kind of keeps you going, because geeks themselves are obsessive. And Christians can be obsessive sometimes in some detrimental ways. Like we've all met unhealthy Christians who misinterpret or manipulate using scripture or what have you. So there's a lot of, I feel like there's a lot of balance that needs to go into something like a Christian Comic-Con. I don't know. What do you guys think? Like when you read the article, what did you guys, how were you processing or what were your initial impressions? Because my impression was that's an intense group of people.
Yeah. I think like, for the most part, I was pretty on board. I was like, yeah, okay, this is pretty cool. And I mean, it's kind of in the vein of what we're trying to do with the podcast too. So it's kind of hard not to
right,
at least
exactly.
like say like, oh, hey, no, like other people are doing this too. That's great. But there was a few things that I'm sitting there and it does potentially create sort of that tension and that odd vibe and like. When they started getting into the bit about the people who were talking about colonizing Mars.
Oh,
and
yeah.
All that,
the
and just like,
ask me about space Catholics.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, what?
Right.
It just seemed bizarre. And I loved the way the author of the article handled it because he was just like, but I mean, just to have the imagination and to consider the possibility and to explore that. And I was like, yeah, no, actually, you're right. You know, like it's an odd idea. But if we sit back and objectively talk about any of the things that, like any nerd is interested in and speak of it in very simple terms. I mean, you can make anything sound stupid if you turn it, you know, put it in simple enough terms, like that's the reality of it. And like, so I appreciated the perspective that he took with it and to applaud it and to say like, yeah, no, this is potentially a really cool thing. And it's good to see that this is developed. And even if it is a bit odd and very niche, it's still, there's still value in that, and it's still an important intersection.
Yeah, it was interesting for me because I definitely, there's part of me that had the reaction of, oh, this is kind of cool, this is a fun intersection. And yeah, it's very similar to the podcast as well. I also had the gut reaction though when I first started reading of, why do we need this? And there's part of me that shriveled just a little bit because I saw. So for people who aren't within Christian culture and things, there is this phenomena that exists where people have this tendency to take things and then make them Christian.
Right.
And it's done terribly. There is a lot of Christian music that is not good. There is some that is good, and
it is incredibly difficult to do.
Yeah, just like every other type of music, it is incredibly hard to make something that is good, and it's very easy to pass off, especially within the Christian genre, something that has a good message at its heart, executed okay, but sounds just like everything else, and it to be passed off as the next greatest thing. There are so many different things that I've seen where people just feel like they have to make a Christian version of something. And that's where I initially went with this article. It was like, oh, why do we need a Christian Comic-Con? But that's not where this author went. And that's not what it seems like this conference is. It's a conference this con is something to celebrate kind of the union and the cross section, not trying to simply say, we don't like your cons, we're going to go make our own.
Right, because even in the article, Eric, he talks about how the people who go to what they call the Geek Orthodox Convention, which I laughed really hard at. Alan, you'll be proud of me. It was a pun that I found funny. I'm doing a lot of heart work on the area of puns.
You know what this actually would be considered, too?
What?
Western Geek Orthodoxy.
Yeah, exactly. It's so good. This is one area probably never get
puns.
Old for me. It's really funny. But they're talking about how the people who go to this also go to San Diego Comic-Con and go to Dragon Con and Gen Con, Gary Con. They go to those things. So they're not exclusivists. They're not people who are going to this being like, finally, a space where I can breathe. I can finally be myself. I can be a Christian out in the open. They're not the type of people who feel the need to isolate themselves from the rest of the world, which I really appreciate, because that was also something that I was reading for, was, okay, yeah. Are these people just trying to set themselves apart in right. a way that ignores the rest of the world?
Definitely.
But it doesn't sound like that they're doing. Because I mean, honestly, when I was reading it, I was like, what is the thing that's going to be like, there it is, I'm not going to this ever.
Mm.
And I honestly couldn't find it.
No, honestly, yeah. It seemed like a pretty cool idea, and it seemed like that the execution is pretty cool, and it's not a huge con, and it seems like they've had a crew of 100 people that have come back year over year, and it's like, okay, this seems legitimate, and they... Where space Catholicism might be,
I don't know.
A little
I am
bit strange.
Very interested when they were talking about trying to figure out the microorganisms that they would need to be able to grow plants to be able to have Eucharist on Mars. I was like, okay, I'm in. Let's figure this out. Like, what do we need to do here? How yeah. do we colonize this so
Which
we can have space
I'm
Eucharist?
I'm supposed to be the sciencey one.
I know. This was the one time where I was like, wait, science.
Yeah.
Wait, this is science. I don't tell no one.
But no, it was really interesting. I think the space Catholicism to backpedal just a second. I loved how they were trying to figure out the differences to sync the liturgical calendar across
yeah,
two different planets.
Yeah.
I was like, that is a level of commitment.
Having been a worship arts major, I was like, this is my jam.
Yeah.
Continue. Go on.
But no, it seemed really cool, and it seemed like a fun place where people could actually come together and openly have both sides of their lives exposed. Not that they're living one without the other. This is kind of the celebration of where the two shall meet.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed just kind of like a very interesting, cool idea. Just for reference, too, we will have a link to that article and a link to the con in the show notes, which can be found at bit.ly/minmaxpod, and look for episode 16. Just figured I'd drop that in there. Found out that people weren't being able to see the show notes if you use iTunes. So we're fixing that. Sorry, guys.
This is very interesting to me because of how, like, and we've talked about this before a little bit, the Christian perception towards geek and nerd culture,
mm-hmm.
especially gamers specifically, because that's an easy target. It's obvious what they're doing. It's hard to hide that you're playing a video game because
right.
Because that's what you're doing. It's on a screen. But something that I kind of appreciate and kind of want to pick your guys' brain about a little bit is this section of text that he wrote about imagination and geeks. Eric mentions in the article, as we talk about this, you know, burden with our faith, and not like burden like a bad thing, but, you know, the work we feel like we are compelled to do with what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, celebrating imagination, like we're saying, like this juxtaposition, that discussion of imagination is something I find I have to think about a lot because of how geeks are interpreted by Christians a lot of the time, mm-hmm. as what they're into being a waste of time. Like, you know, get a real job. Why don't you pick up a trade? You know, why can't you be interested in something that's doing something, et cetera, et cetera. And he mentions this in the article, and I really appreciate that. He says, as much as I try to celebrate the childhood imagination, the Martian liturgical calendar triggered an instinct to question all of this fanciful wondering. After a morning of blissful escape, reality was back. When neo-Nazis are making a comeback in Virginia, we have more pressing issues than evangelizing Mars, I said to myself. And yet, that is one of the great things about these types of conventions. It helps expand your imagination, and that is a key ingredient for finding the hope needed to imagine a way out of this darkness. There are hopeful, crazy people with tenacious imaginations that won't let go. They play these things out as far as their minds will take them. Even at its extremes, there is something of beauty in that tenacity. And that really resonated with me because, guys, I study specifically the intersection of theology and theater, which no one pays anybody to look into, really. It is a niche thing. So I remember in seminary really struggling with that and feeling like I was ineffectual in every way possible. I would always get really angry with God. Like, why did you make me interested and good at two things nobody cares about anymore? And I would feel that constantly. And I would, you know, talk to my friend Sarah and be like, Sarah, I don't know what I'm going to do. like, short of teaching a class that maybe people will sign up for, maybe, and then also maybe do the homework for if I'm lucky, what am I going to do with this? Like, no one's going to pay me a full-time wage to do anything. And everyone's like, well, you could always pick up a trade, or you could always, you know, go into something else and then do that as a hobby. And I'm like, right, a hobby I have a master's degree in. That's
mm-hmm.
fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I got my master's degree as a hobby, just a little phase I'm going
yeah,
through.
You know,
all that work I put in, it's just a phase. You're right. And I still struggle with that. Even as I'm going on, you know, we're going to be moving to Scotland to get my PhD. That's a lot of pressure. Like, I genuinely would yeah. sit up night and be like, I'm having us make this international move for a degree that people may not care about. And I'm taking that risk, and I'm asking my husband to take that risk with me. What am I doing? And I would pray, and I'd be like, God, why? Like, why would you make me good at this thing that no one cares about? And then I kept meeting people who actually cared about it, and I'd be like, oh, that was a worthwhile experience. So then to hear Eric write about this group of people who are celebrating faith and imagination specifically. Like, that's a lot of what geeks are, is just really imaginative people, and that is so important. But we like to pass that off as being like, that's so cute that you do that with your free time. It's not as important as, you know, say, going to a protest or to be preaching in the pulpit. You know, having an imagination isn't as important. And that kills me.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we're losing so many people because of our mm-hmm. inability to celebrate imagination. The people that I meet the most who tell me, you know, I used to be in church. I don't feel comfortable in church anymore because I couldn't do it. They didn't like who I was, or they didn't they didn't allow me to use my gifts for the church, for whatever reason, are some of the most imaginative people, typically artists, the different types of musicians, but a lot of the times, like, actual, like, tactile medium artists, painters, poets, a lot of actors I've met have been like, I didn't have a place in the church. I didn't feel comfortable. They also didn't understand my weird work schedule, because actors work on weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, the rest of the week as well. And I have such a burden for them. My heart goes out to them because I get it. I get what it's like to not have your imagination remotely respected. And I mean, have you guys ever experienced that at all where you feel like your imagination is something to be laughed at?
I mean, yeah, I think especially coming towards the end of my high school years and going into college, I felt that tension constantly of like, why am I into all of these things? And these are all, you know, childish things. And as I'm like growing into my adult life in that phase of life, to look at all of the things that I'm interested in, and, you know, how much I've invested over the years into Star Wars, and, you know, all of my love that I've had for that. And then to look at like my massive collection of Magic the Gathering trading cards and Lord of the Rings, the Living Card Game trading cards, and Star Wars, the Living Card Game trading cards, and Star Wars, the TCG trading cards, and like, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, I would dread to see that number of how much I've spent on all those things over the years. And so looking back on all those things and thinking like, was this a waste? Like, is this a meaningless part of my life? Was this just childish? Does
right.
this mean nothing? And being a little haunted by that and struggling through it and having to kind of come to terms with it to say like, no, this is part of who I am. And that's why I think I'm so compelled now that I've had a little more time to look back on my life to say like, no, like, this is why I feel like I have to be an author, because like, this is me. This is who I am. Like, this is not just some silly little thing that I do in the evenings on the weekends. Like, this is what like consumes a significant portion of my life. And there's a reason for that. Like,
right.
That's meaningful in and of itself. So yeah, I mean, I've lived in that same tension. I've lived in the same tension. I mean, I'm living in the same tension that you were just describing with school too. And having, you know, I too am sitting here going into my last year of seminary thinking like, I don't know what happens after this. I have no idea what I'm doing with this degree. And I don't know, you know, like, but I have to trust that there is a reason for me to be here, and that there is, you know, whatever this calling that I think I'm discovering is also going to be meaningful. And I think the beauty of imagination and creativity is, for one thing, it's sharing in the essence of who God is in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I think our ability to imagine and be creative is a very strong reflection of God's creative nature.
Right.
And just being an image bearer, like living into our creativity is living into our image bearing in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also think it's a gift that was given for a reason too. And there's so much productive and beautiful and even there's utility ultimately in art, and we don't see it because it's not obvious, but it's deeper. And, you know, the ironic thing is, you know, like people who produce TV and like commercials and whatnot, they know it. They know how much you can use media to manipulate and do things and
Definitely.
To influence and, you know, do things like mm-hmm. that. So
yep.
there's so much more to it than we generally give credit to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, absolutely. It's so important that we praise that and allow it to grow, especially within the church and in these geek communities.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I know that I would drive my family nuts with some of the things that, and my brother will attest to this, we would get a movie from the library. I would find a movie and I would watch it like 3 or 4 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't, and I, at the time I couldn't tell you why, but there was, I would watch it, and then I would rewind it, and then I would watch it again, and something would feel different, and I couldn't tell you then what I was doing, but what I was doing was, I was probably checking out the cinematography at the beginning, and then I would go back, or I would watch the story mm-hmm. the first time, and be completely enthralled by whatever John Wayne movie I was inevitably watching. Big Jake was a big favorite, because it was dark and broody, and there was some actual real tension in the midst of it. Big Jake's a good one if you guys haven't seen it. It's pretty funny too. So it's a good one. But I would go back and rewatch things over and over and over. And now being in the career that I am, it makes total sense because I was probably watching the cinematography, the lighting, the acting, the framing, and doing all of this stuff. And a lot of John Wayne's early stuff and early Clint Eastwood stuff was Ford. You guys know who I'm talking about.
Harrison?
The iconic. No, the. Oh, gosh darn it. Ford Westerns.
The guy who made the Model T.
That's Henry. Henry Ford. John
stuff.
Ford. Good.
I had nothing to contribute, so I had to say yeah.
Sorry,
something.
John Ford. That was going to drive me absolutely nuts. He made some of the most iconic Westerns in existence. And if you guys didn't guess, I watch a lot of Westerns growing up.
Picking up on that.
It's kind of my genre for the longest time. But I would drive them nuts, and I drove my brother insane because I would just rewatch the movie. He'd go home, or he'd come home from somewhere and then drive away and then come back, and I'd be watching the same movie. And I was just completely enthralled, and I would do it all summer long, and he did not understand. But for me, that makes perfect sense now. And they used to make fun of me for it, and people would make fun of my fixating on the littlest of, or the smallest of things, like fixating on like shifting something left to right so it felt right in my head, otherwise it was wrong. And like in college, people would make fun of me too, because I would focus so hard on edits and things for videos. And I called it like visual noise because it would physically hurt my head if something didn't move at the right point. And it all just kind of, and people would make fun of me for it because we get into the edit and we do group critiques. And I was like, and people knew, it was like, I'm going to be harsh, but I wasn't trying to be mean. It's like, I'm just trying to be constructive because this is the level of stress and critique I put on my own work and doing creative work day in and day out as a photographer, as a retoucher. Like that's where I live. And so that level of detail and being so focused on that stuff, it's kind of where I live. And so I definitely, I see that. And I see what you guys are meaning to about the reflection of God and how being image bearers and using creativity to reflect the image, like that all comes down into kind of the beauty of how we all have these individual things and where things like these cons can bring us all together to celebrate the individual us as our individual selves in this group body of nerds.
Right. Well, when you alienate creatives from a church community, then you are just having them disperse into other areas with which to try to learn how to critique well and critique in a way that is uplifting, as a Christian, you know, there's a way you can critique somebody and be totally harsh and cut them down and hopefully cross your fingers they're resilient enough to take it. And there is a way where you can give critique without shaming them. And I feel like making sure that intent to not shame somebody and to help them grow from that critique, that's a pretty big Christian tenet, right? That we are building each other up. Iron sharpens iron.
Mm-hmm.
But iron isn't cutting down iron. Yeah, right. It's sharpening. So that's one of those things that we're needing to be better at. So then when you alienate creatives from the church, where else are they going to learn that? Like, hopefully they meet some other nice people, whether they're Christians or not, to learn that from. But that's rare. And if you've been a creative in a free market, in a freelance market, that's hard to find.
It's cutthroat.
Because it is cutthroat, like you were saying. It is incredibly cutthroat. Like, I think the three of us have all worked in some capacity, in some freelance capacity, in some way. And so it's very difficult to find those pockets of creatives who are just freelancing and also okay if you get a job out that they also applied to. So it's hard to then also critique without that bitterness creeping in. And you need a safe, strong community to do that in. So then when you alienate these people from another Christian community where they could be learning that healthy technique,
mm-hmm.
that's not doing the church well. Like, creatives need those pragmatists who are like bottom line people who are really good at structure and in thinking through, you know, the end goal and the meat, like what's needed to get to the end goal. They're necessary. I value them. Those students that I have that are like, oh, I study math, I'm terrible at public speaking, I'm like, yeah, but guess what? I'm probably going to be working for you someday because you're necessary. You're so very necessary. At the same time, though, I feel like we honor those people a lot because we are, we're a market based. We're mm-hmm. you know, consumerism mm-hmm. and capitalism. Like, those are the people that get hailed because that's what gets money rolling. So then with creativity, that's a lot harder to monetize. It's based off of, you know, popularity and not so much merit all the time.
Preach.
Yep.
So we look at that and we go, well, your work isn't measurable as far as how successful it is. So I'm not going to value it as much because it's hard to monetize. So let's just not. And that's a really easy trap for churches to fall into. And that's a dangerous trap for churches to fall into when you take the things that are easily measured and things that it's like obvious that they're working. And then you just cut off everybody else where you just can't measure their work. When you get into that business model, that's not keeping your church this healthy, living, breathing organism it should be. You're making it a systematic structure that has, you know, no living. There's no room for error.
Right.
There are just margins and ledgers.
Right.
And that's not church.
No.
Church is
that's
full
not
of
life.
That's not that's, life. Yeah. Right. You're exactly. And the church is supposed to be like a representation of like this is what life should look like.
Right.
And we're so rarely ever that because it's full of flawed and messy people.
Yeah.
But then when you try to go, okay, well, let's just take all the bottom line people because that'll eliminate all the sin. Like, these are people who have systems and structures. So when we mm-hmm. just include those people, that'll take care of all of the sin because they'll be able to mark it down in an Excel spreadsheet.
Pharisees.
Which
Sorry,
we can all
something cut in my throat there.
Which we can all be guilty of, right?
Oh, absolutely.
But at the same time, it is that I've seen this time and time again where like creatives get lost. We can't measure your work and you're not benefiting us in any way because mm-hmm. you don't produce a profit margin. Now, granted, we're now in a church where it's like full of creatives and now we need some structure and that's necessary.
Right.
So it's been interesting for Alan and I to be in that place where we're like, oh, we're not in the minority here. This is weird.
Sure.
Who knows how to work a spreadsheet?
Yeah.
So we've had to pick up some skills that we haven't had before. We're like, okay, this is good that we know this. But by and large, it's been the opposite at other churches.
Yeah, it's really interesting, too, when you start thinking through what you were getting into with the business model of church and how that starts causing even more issues. It's church in a lot of ways, and Ashley and I can directly speak to this. Well, we all can directly speak to this, actually, because the relationship that we all have with our church and with God, like, there's a parallel and a What is the word I'm searching for? It's
making big flappy gestures. Making big flappy gestures. Trying to summon words.
It's not a parallel. That Christianity, like our relationship with God, is very similar to a marriage. And that there's a word for that, not using like or as, that I am...
Simile? Or not metaphor. Using like
not
or
using
metaphor.
Like metaphor. Thank you! Gosh! That was driving me absolutely nuts. I was like
I thought you were talking about like, what's the word that describes the relationship between God and marriage? That's the word I was seeking. Oh. I was like, sacrament? Yeah, I don't know.
Confused. Confusion.
No, what I was meaning is that a lot of the times there's the metaphor that our relationship with God is like a marriage. And I had a therapist tell me this once because I was just going through something a couple years ago, and there were times when Ashley and I would like just fight about something like all married couples do, and I would try to go at it from a systematic approach of the same way that I do things at work, and I'm like, well, I normally do these type of things at work, so this is going to fix the problem. And the therapist looked at me, it was just like, your wife's not your work, and you can't expect the same things to work in those places. In the same way, though, when we start trying to apply business principles to a church congregation, and we start looking at the measurable outputs, you're going to inevitably run into issues there because there are so many unquantifiable things. And if we start chasing the carrot that is what brings us the business successful things within the church, we get into dangerous territory because it's the same thing when you're trying to chase it as a creative. If you're a photographer trying to chase the current trends and things that are happening, if you're trying to make your color palettes and everything on Instagram look perfect so you have a consistent look and that's what the ad agencies are looking for and that's what reps are looking for, that's what they're looking for this week. And it could change in a season and the drop of a hat changes. And if you don't change with it, you're dead. You're just dead in the water. But it's the same thing for church. Mm-hmm. If we start chasing these popular trends, if we chase really good music and really good lighting and really good production, speaking of someone who did production for a while, and Kyle works production at his church, if you start chasing that and you actually start having producers run church and have it and start running it very much like a TED Talk, it's fine, but you're chasing something and you're trying to quantify and trying to give a measurable metric and apply that in a business sense to something that is immeasurable in that way.
That would actually, that you just inspired me for a really great new fun game where you could just have a quiz and be like, okay, sermon or TED Talk?
Yes.
That sounds wonderful, actually.
Really sad game, but a game for me nonetheless.
Yep.
New podcast idea. 5-minute podcast. Sermon or TED Talk. You give a little bit of snippet of each, voting, and then the weeping ensues.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Oh. Scary. Oh, man.
Right?
Oh,
you're thinking
pain.
About it, and you're like,
yeah, now,
oh, gosh.
It's really starting to settle in. Oh.
Yeah.
It's actually giving me, like, goosebumps almost. It's so,
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to let that one go.
That was real satire. Anyway, moving on. I'm not bitter. It's fine.
It's fine.
But you're so right. And that's what I really worry about, especially with what you were getting at with things being, you know, where Christian evangelical culture takes things and is like, okay, we like this type of music. Now we're going to make a Christian version of it.
Yep.
And really, studios have caught on to this, and they're monetizing that. They're like, okay, we'll take some artists, and we'll have them produce some Christian stuff, like movies. This is a big thing in movies right now, where production studios, like, what was the one we were talking about a couple days ago? They did Hunger Games, and they did their...
Lionsgate.
Lionsgate, thank you, sorry. They're a company that now they have a specific production venture specifically for Christian movies. And movie production companies are recognizing this. Okay, Christian movies are something that's apparently wanted. There's a demographic for this. So we're just going to produce them. Not because we actually care about the content. Not because we are particularly interested in hiring Christians or sharing the gospel or what have you. They're just like, oh, okay, there's money in this. So why not go for it? Mm-hmm. It's just another pot of money to put our hand in. And that's what we're opening ourselves up to when we say, we'll eat it if it has a Christian label. You're just monetizing the gospel, and that is nothing of the gospel at all.
Right.
Yeah, or at worst, you're monetizing the gospel, or what also happens is, and some people might say this at best, is we're producing things that are subpar content and people are treating it like it is the best thing that has ever been created. Mm. And all of a sudden we have this double standard of, well, I mean, the message is great and that's what matters. Storytelling doesn't really matter. When you start putting dogma above your story, everything suffers and it makes all of us look terrible.
Yeah.
Like, I can think of, there's a production company that, since you went down this road, that's called Sherwood Pictures. And they are the production company that is behind Fireproof and Facing the Giants and, oh gosh, what are the other terrible movies? Flywheel, Courageous, and it's just,
it's very shallow storytelling.
Yeah, it's
extremely shallow. The characters are one-dimensional. There's nothing at stake a lot of the time. Or people will say that there's something at stake, but ultimately you know in the end that the people are going to have a fairy tale ending.
Right.
They make a lot of jokes about swearing without swearing. Like, they'll cut them off and they're like, see, we've got some edge. Mm-hmm. We made a joke about almost swearing. Like, okay, really, have you met people?
Yeah, right.
Everything about it is very cheap. And so when you watch it, anybody who isn't a Christian is going to look at that and go, that's laughable. That's what they think life is? Are you kidding me? Have they felt pain before?
Right. Well, and that's just it. Like, and we've hit on this in previous episodes a little bit, but it's like when we, especially as Christians, if we're going to engage the world with a narrative, when the world is stuck facing a narrative that's awful, right? And seeing the horror that faces us all every day now, right? Like, all you have to do is turn on the TV and it's there and it's awful. Mm-hmm. And whether it's, you know, an actual TV show or it's the news at 5 o'clock, like, it's bad.
Right.
And so to face that every single day and then to go to see something that's supposed to be inspiring hope, that's just giving us this shallow ghost of what reality is, like,
it's making a mockery of human experience.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. And we have to, you know, if we want to engage in helping people understand why it is that we've embraced the narrative that we have as Christians and why it is that we embrace Christ, we have to engage it in the world that it is, in the world that exists. And that includes in our storytelling. That includes in our creativity. That means we can't censor our creativity just because it offends our sensibilities that we think we're supposed to have because that's what it means to be a good Christian. Mm-hmm. We have to actually engage with the real world as it is and be unafraid and unashamed to do that, which is hard. And it's, you know, it's hard coming up against, especially, you know, some of the more conservative roots of Christianity and the way things have been for so long. And I don't think that, you know, that's not to villainize conservative Christianity necessarily, but it's just to say, like, the world is changing and inevitably the church is going to grow and change with it.
Right. Well, and I think there's something to be said, you know, it's good to be cautious and to be discerning about what we consume. Absolutely. Like, we've talked about that. It's just there are sometimes where it gets to a point where it's like, okay, if you're going to consume something, make it quality, not this, like we were talking about, like the sanitized versus, I forget the other side that I was talking about. Pure versus purification versus sanitation.
Right.
And instead of trying to create something that's pure, we create something that's sanitized, and then we consume it like it's whole, like it's a whole food,
right.
And it's not. Right. I remember when Alan and I, we were part of a movie group, and we watched Calvary, which is set in Ireland, and it's about an Irish priest that takes care of a very small parish, and he's got there's the main character, and then there's 12 other characters. So I'm sure you can get the illustration there. And this man, he, in confession, one of his parishioners says, you know, I'm going to come and I'm going to kill you in what, 7 days? It's a
seven
full
days,
week, right?
Yeah.
Yep. In 7 days, I'm going to come and I'm going to kill you. And he's like, well, why? And he talks about how he was molested by a priest and no one did anything. And he's like, I'm very sorry about that. I had nothing to do with that. And he's like, I know a lot of good men didn't do anything about that. And so it's not going to mean anything for me to kill a bad man. People will say he deserved it. People will pay attention if I kill a good man. And so you see this illustration of, you know, Christ in this. And we're having this discussion in this movie group. And someone said, I didn't see what was salvific about this movie at all. I didn't see anything about Christ in this.
I didn't see hope.
I didn't see hope in this at all. And one of the people in the movie group was like, have you read the gospel?
Yeah, right.
Like, you know how that ends for Jesus, right? Yeah. Like, because the person was like, it was very violent. I didn't understand why we needed all that violence.
Which, like, literally, open your Bible.
Right.
Read your Bible.
Yeah, like, exactly.
We love to censor and just pick and choose the little bits and pieces that are nice and hopeful and cheery in the Bible. But brutal, vicious rape. That's the part mm-hmm. that we skip. And, you know,
right.
war and murder of women and children. And,
genocide.
And just, yeah, no genocide in general.
Let's,
yeah,
let's throw that in a children's Bible, why don't we?
Right. Yeah. Let's. Yeah.
Animals are happy.
Yeah, right.
Good thing if your church follows the lectionary, then you can just choose which weeks to skip so you don't have to worry about hearing scripture you're uncomfortable with.
That's not how that works, but okay.
It could be.
Yeah, okay, let's not put you in charge of a church anytime soon. Oh gosh, but yeah, like no one wants to cover those, and mm-hmm. I really applaud the pastors that make it a point to tackle those really difficult sections.
Absolutely.
Because they are difficult. That's not something yeah. that we're hedging against. They're difficult passages. That's why things like the book Texts of Terror exist,
right.
which is by Phyllis
Trible.
Phyllis Trible, yep.
Thank you. And why it's important to talk about. So we should put that in the show notes. That's a really good book to discuss because it takes a lot of those really difficult passages, especially difficult passages for women,
mm-hmm.
and it talks about them, and it doesn't give you a happy ending. It just says, yeah,
right.
you're going to have to sit with that
yeah.
because that's really hard.
And that's
so what do we do about that with that as Christians? We just sit in the difficult tension.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's one of the great things about, especially the school that Ashley and I go to is, mm-hmm. you know, the two kind of pillars that school is really built on is essentially racial reconciliation and mm-hmm. women in ministry and ultimately gender reconciliation within
right.
that and within
yeah.
the church context. Yep. And so, you know, every class, every quarter, there's always stuff that's being included by feminist authors and by, mm-hmm. you know, authors from various ethnic minorities and things mm-hmm. like that. And it's so, you know, especially at least from my perspective as a white male, so eye-opening to like look at some of this stuff and go like, oh, because I never would have read that story that way because no one would have pointed it out to me
right.
and I would have just been taught to just ignore that part of the story. And then you suddenly look at it and you're like, oh, that's in the Bible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think if I had never gone to Northern Seminary, I don't think I would have ever entered into a church space feeling like I was wanted. I think I would have probably
sure.
always ended condemning myself to churches that didn't want me to be fully me. And to be in those classrooms and to have healthy relationships with men, finally,
sure.
to be able to have friendships and not constantly be worried about whether they saw me as a sexual object or a burden on their ministry was a huge relief. I didn't even realize I was carrying that until I entered into my first class and I'm like, oh,
yeah.
this is what it's like to be, want someone to want my opinion.
Yeah.
This is what it feels like to have somebody consider me. Now, what does that mean for, you know, the black woman sitting next to me who has it on two fronts,
right.
you know, like, so it was, like you said, it's incredibly eye-opening regardless of what side you're on.
Sure.
Because you're going, oh, there's some work that needs to be done
right.
here within me and like within my relationships. And like, had I not gone there, Kyle, you and I probably wouldn't be as close friends as we are
no.
because I wouldn't have allowed myself to be. I'd be
sure.
like, he's dangerous and he's going to think of me as dangerous. We can't be friends. Alan probably won't allow me to anyway. Like, there was a lot of work that Alan and I did
oh,
while
yeah.
I was in seminary.
Sure.
A lot of conversations that we had to have because when I started going, I mean, a lot of the feedback I was getting was, why are you going? You can't do anything with it. I actually had a peer of mine when I was in undergrad say, like, you don't need that to be a church secretary.
Wow.
Yeah. And that was, I was a senior and I was older than this person and we were all worship arts students. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And so I just, of course, dug my heels in more. But also
right.
I was just like, who says that to somebody?
Reason, but yeah.
Like that doesn't even follow. That does not follow.
Right.
That's poor logic. That's a fallacy.
Right.
Like, let's have a real conversation. But yeah,
oh,
that's what they said. You don't need that to be a church secretary. And even Alan, you were at the time, you weren't entirely certain. Like, just
oh
to
yeah,
be honest.
No, it's yeah, completely honestly, there. Like, women in ministry was something I struggled with for a long time. I went to a pretty conservative church when I was in college, and It wasn't one that affirmed women ministry, and I'd grown up in a Pentecostal church that did, and then went through my Young Restless Reform days, and I honestly landed at a spot where I wasn't comfortable with it, and I got into college, and I went to Judson, and I actually read Text of Terror mm-hmm. when I was in my senior year. Thanks, Rob Wallace, for forcing me to read that. You wrecked me forever. And
in that, you helped him grow.
Yes. Yes, you did. That book was eye-opening. We each had to read a passage, and we had to do a presentation on it in class. That wrecked me. That was real hard to get my head around, and it forced me to change the way that I've used scripture. And Rob is honestly responsible for a lot of the way that I view scripture changing. And then mm-hmm. Ashley went to seminary and went to a seminary that was affirming women. And Ashley had classmates, and we had friends who were getting their MDivs. And it was real uncomfortable for a while for me, because I was like, I don't know that I agree with this. And the more Ashley studied and the more that I studied, I landed at a place where, like, you know what? I think I've been interpreting this wrong. And I genuinely feel like that this way of viewing this particular issue is not quite as binary as a lot of people make it. And there's a lot more that goes into the readings of these passages that informs that decision. Mm-hmm. And informs the decision of women deserve to be in ministry, and women are called to be in ministry, and that's not a gender thing. That's a Holy Spirit calling thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just it. And so living in that tension and having been there, having lived both sides of this coin, it was definitely one of those things that Ashley going to seminary and then myself, and then we lived there for several years. Like, you started seminary in 2011.
Mm.
2010. No, it was 2011.
No, 2011. Sorry, 2011. Yes, you're
and
correct.
And then we moved out of there summer of 2016. Mm-hmm. So we lived there for 5 years. And Ashley attended for 3.5. And yep. then we lived there. So I was absorbing by osmosis for 5 years. And this is something I openly joke with other seminary spouses, that sometimes the group that we ran with, that there was a lot of seminary hubs. So the husbands of wives who were in seminary, that we should form our own little club because we are the seminary hubs. And we do a lot of the things while the other ones are in class and there. But it's just one of those things that you live there and you watch your spouse or you watch your significant other go through these things and wrestle with these texts. There we go. And it's impossible for you to not come out changed.
Well, and something that I really appreciate, going back to that idea of iron sharpening iron, is when you and I were having those really difficult conversations, you didn't just flip-flop and go, oh, okay, you're right, and you're angry about this, so like, let's just not make an argument of it, I'll just change. Like, you did the hard work. You didn't just say, okay, whatever, I'm surrounded by these people who think this, so I'm just going to... you know, adjust. Right, yeah. Exactly. Which I really appreciated, because I wouldn't have trusted nor valued your opinion if that's what you had done.
Yeah, it was impossible for me to do that, because I had genuinely firmly believed the stance that I had taken and lived there, despite my brother telling me I was wrong, despite several other people coming alongside me like, maybe you should really rethink this one. And I clung to what I thought my interpretation of scripture was telling me.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I really started digging in and really taking into consideration a lot of the things that go into versions of the Bible that are printed and differences mm-hmm. in translation politics. We can do a whole nother episode about that, which we might need to get Rob and maybe our friend Gary in, who actually was responsible for translating part of the TNIV. He and another guy were responsible for, was it Romans?
I honestly don't remember. I remember that conversation.
Don't quote us in the book, but he was responsible for, with one other person, translating, it wasn't the TNIV, it was the NLT, it was the New Living Translation,
These are the two things I remember that conversation. Him saying that and him remarking on my boots. That's what I remember of that conversation.
Because you were wearing the wedding boots, I believe.
No, I wasn't wearing the wedding boots. I was wearing your dad's old pig hog farming boots.
That's right. The Red Wings. The high top Red Wings. Because it was cold. And
I'm the only one that fits his shoes.
Yep. Completely derailed. I don't know where I was going.
It's okay, but it would be good to have an episode to talk about, you know.
Translation politics. And so it wasn't until I started considering a lot of those things and weighing those against things that we know about the time period in which scripture was written and doing the full hard work of hermeneutics and exegesis in text to really re-examine some of my preconceived notions and some of the things that I thought I was reading. And then I came to believe, and still firmly do, that I was reading incorrectly. And I was not trusting that God and the Holy Spirit know better about what a person's call is than simply the gender they were born into. And I think that's really important for us to recognize and acknowledge that it's not quite as easy to say, well, you were born a woman, so you are a helpmate, and you are there to support the ministry of your husband. I think there's a lot of times, and this I came to this, it took me a long time. It took probably 3-4 months of conversation. And
but that's the thing is, you say like that was an incredibly long period of time. It takes some people years. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, like, you took the fast track to egalitarianism.
Yeah,
like, I mean, all things considered, because there are some people that are currently married that I've read articles where women are like, I was married, we were complementarian, which means that they believed that women had specific roles to fill and men had specific roles to fill, and they were equal but different. But they lived complementarian lifestyle, and then this woman felt a call to ministry, and she had to navigate that within a marriage that would not have allowed for that. Mm-hmm. And then that marriage had to go back and, you know, they were between that man and wife, they were having to have this discussion and have a disagreement like this, something that was so foundational to how they functioned while they were married. So they being practicing Christians, they weren't about to get a divorce. They were going to try to fight through this. So, you know, that's way more difficult and a lot of hard work on that end that has a lot at stake. We weren't even married yet.
No.
And to be honest, when we were going through those arguments, I knew it was a problem for me when I started thinking, I don't know if I can marry Alan if we can't come around to this, because I don't want to be stunted my entire marriage just because my husband can't encourage me in something I'm feeling called by God to do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't have wanted you to marry me. Honestly. Like not in the
I hear you.
But if that's where looking at that situation now, I would have been telling you to get out.
Mm-hmm.
And because if your husband can't support you in the things that you're doing, in the call that you feel, and that goes within marriage, and that also goes within just your identity.
Mm-hmm.
If I couldn't come along you, or a partner can't come alongside you and say, I support you in these endeavors,
mm-hmm.
this is who you believe you're being called to be, and if you can't stand there with you, get out of their way.
Right.
And it has to be that way. And I think it's important for people in communities to recognize, especially to kind of circle back around to this, with the idea of talking about cons and talking about just that type of culture, that there's an identity there of belonging. Mm-hmm. And there's an identity of being safe. I was talking with Dennis with this a little bit, and I likened cons to sporting events. And so everyone has their sports teams, and they'll mm-hmm. go to a big stadium, and they'll party real hard for a day, and then they'll go home and they'll talk about it the rest of the week, and then they might go back the next Sunday and do it again.
Right.
These are the stadium events for nerds.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. I've started calling jocks sports nerds for that purpose specifically, mm-hmm. to be like, no, you're a nerd too, just about something else.
Right.
Yep.
Something that's a little more socially acceptable. You're a sports nerd.
Right.
Like, you play fantasy football, you're a freaking sports nerd. How is D&D different?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're playing sports nerd D&D.
Yep.
You're quantifying people down to a stat sheet and how well they're going to perform in a given situation.
Right.
It's Dungeons and Freaking Dragons,
yeah,
sports edition.
Add dice to that. Exactly.
SE. Yeah. D&D SE.
Coined. Ours.
Boom. Show title.
Unfortunately, I'm not sure we can actually get the D&D part of that.
We'll make an arrangement. They
Dragons
will see
and
the
Dungeons.
Light.
Dragons.
There you go. Cool.
Wormholes and wyverns. There. Done.
Boom. There you go.
Crushed it.
Wormholes and wyverns.
Sports
SE.
Edition.
But we'll have to create the original before we create the SE. Otherwise, there's just an addendum to a game that doesn't even exist.
Give us time. So,
circling back to an actual point, though. No, I love that idea of recognizing in the broader sense of community, coming alongside people who genuinely have a calling. And I think the challenge there, not to come off as antagonistic or to push back against this too hard, but the challenge is like when it is like knowing when someone recognizes a calling, right?
Yeah.
And to have the discernment of your community in that process. And I think that's where, again, it becomes the vicious balance and process of dialogue and conversation and processing through this with people and being, you know, both sides being open to the feedback of the other, because, you know, I know there are times in my life where I mean, there was a time 5 years ago or so where I basically openly stood against my entire church and very nearly got myself kicked out for it because I believed that strongly that, you know, I was standing up for what was, you know, for what I believed in the context of that situation. And I, to this day, look back on that and say, you know, if I could go back and do it again, I'd be smarter about it. I'd be a little kinder about it, but I'd fight 10 times as hard for it.
Yeah.
And I would, you know, the situation would have ended very differently if I could go back with the knowledge that I have now. And I don't, you know, I don't regret that at all. And I don't think I was in the wrong necessarily. But even so, that was me standing against my entire community in that moment. And so that's where it becomes this like vicious challenge of like, when is it right to challenge your community? When is it right for your community to come alongside you? And again, to have the space to dialogue about that and to live into that. And it's something we're just not good at. And we've covered it. I mean,
no, we're not.
In bits and pieces all over the map in half of our episodes, even a little bit last week.
Right. But, well, because I mean, think about it. We're talking about safe spaces and we're talking about having communities that we identify with. So think about how that plays into leadership structures.
Right.
So when you're on a leadership team, who are you going to naturally gravitate towards to being on that leadership team with you? People who look like you, act like you, have the same interests.
Right.
So then that plays into church politics. If there's a pastor and he or she is particularly charismatic, when you're formulating an elder board, who are they going to be tempted to have on that leadership board, that elder board? People who look like them, act like them, have all the same opinions, because you're going to be supported in every decision you want to make then. So then when you're going against your church community in some way, I challenge people to look at who's on the leadership. Do all of them look like you, act like you, think like you? Or do they look the polar opposite of you? Mm-hmm. That was something that Alan and I struggled with, is the people that were the most aggressively against my calling could not have had my perspective at all. And I know that they believed that they loved me and that they cared about me, but they were coming in between me and the God that I wanted to serve.
Right.
And that's when I had to make a decision, is, okay, is this calling serving my ego, or is this something that it's going to be painful to pursue, but it really is of God and it's going to bring about, you know, some part of the kingdom if I'm being faithful to that call. Mm-hmm. And that was a really hard decision to make, because these were some of Alan's closest friends, mentors, people who really supported us being married. And you know, people we would want on our side, people who we'd want supporting us. Now I'm grateful in that some of those people actually came to my seminary graduation, which they didn't have to do. And I'm grateful for that support. But that is hard when you're going against a community that's supposed to be your community, been surrounding you and supporting you and encouraging you. But they can't then, because they have no ability to see from your perspective.
Right.
And that's, I think, where imagination comes in too, because having a healthy imagination allows for you to empathize with so many more people.
Right. And to actually step into other perspectives.
Exactly.
Yeah, potentially see, oh, Oh, that's what that would look like from the other side of the mirror.
Right, exactly, which is so very necessary for a healthy community.
Yeah, and looking at good team structures and things like that, this is something I kind of study just a little bit. Like, I try to watch and pay attention to this stuff just from a pure kind of a business perspective, but at the same point, it's not. It's more of a team function perspective. Some of the most functional teams are the people that look completely not alike. And they are good leaders go and find people that are way smarter than them or are way more fluent in a lot of other things that they aren't. Mm-hmm. Or someone who will fight them tooth and nail on every decision because both know the understanding that they both have the best outcome in mind. And it's real hard to stand against a community. But at the time when we did it, we were trying to figure out next steps for our life and we kept stagnating. We kept hitting brick walls. And it wasn't until we made that decision and followed our calling to step away. And we don't hate those people. We don't see them all often, but we're still on good terms. But we fundamentally disagreed. And it was one of those things that we could not stay functioning under, and we knew it was not going to change. So we had to choose to step away. And it definitely, it hurt. And it was real hard, but we needed to. And it's where we felt God was leading us. And we look a few years down the road, and the doors are opening that could not have opened before and are opening in a way that is proving this was the move. This is where God was leading us and has been leading us every step of the way.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say that for anybody who feels stuck in a community that is not honoring their call, or they feel like they're just not being heard, a surefire sign that you might not want to stay in that church is if you go home sobbing every Sunday. That's a good sign that you shouldn't.
Unless it's happy tears.
Sure.
But more likely than not.
Right. But it's interesting to me how many people felt like they were just being sinful because they were sad or have been told, "You're sad? Have you prayed about your sadness?"
Oh, yeah.
And then
talking about depression and anxiety and people saying, "Oh, hey, by the way, get over it because God is good." Like, that's great. Tell me why I can't get out of bed in the morning then, which is a topic we are covering.
We're gonna
we
will cover that.
Yes.
That's coming in the coming weeks.
Yeah. Well, October.
Which is still coming.
But so there are some obvious signs that, you know, if you're feeling the need to see a therapist about your church community, that's a good sign that you might need to find a different community to be your healthiest self in. Mm-hmm. Take that from the Min-Max pod crew you know, if you're in an unhealthy situation, don't feel like you need to be a martyr for that community.
Oh, absolutely.
Get out and get to a safer place.
Right.
If you guys have questions or if you just need to talk about a situation that you're in, send us an email. We would love to hear, and we would love to what we can to, even if it's just as simple as we'll be praying for you as you're walking through this situation.
Yeah, because those are hard. It's very hard to lead. I mean, this is how cults work too, right? Like, this is why it's so hard for anybody who's a cult member to leave said cult, because that's been their community that entire time. That's their identity.
Right.
And that's the thing about communities, is that is your identity. So you have to be really careful and discerning about what community you enter into. And it doesn't shock me when people look at Christian churches and go, well, how is that different from a cult? Mm-hmm. Because of depending on how it's run, it can so easily slip into that.
Right.
It can look real bad.
Yeah. So I don't blame people for being skeptical. I was skeptical. I've been skeptical. I continue to be skeptical about a lot of things.
Absolutely.
But
we've all walked away from churches because of the things that we were.
Exactly.
I mean, we've walked this path.
Yeah.
More than once, all of us in different ways.
Right. But it is hard to walk away from them. I'm actually thinking about happened, I think, this past week or the week before. There is I don't know if you guys have heard of the Reverend Robert Lee the Fourth.
Yeah, Robert.
He's a descendant of he's a descendant of General Robert E. Lee, and he goes to Duke. And he's someone I follow on Twitter. He actually followed me first a long time ago, and I was like, wait, what?
Oh, that's crazy.
He was, like, super cool though.
Yeah,
he's one of those people where I'm like, wait, but why?
Huh.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, he graduated Duke Divinity, and he was pastoring a church in North Carolina.
Yeah, and so MTV had called him up and said, hey, we know you're a descendant of General Robert E. Lee. Would you be willing to talk at the VMAs?
Yeah, it was the VMAs.
And introduce the mother of the woman who had been killed during the counter-protest she was run over.
In Charlottesville.
Charlottesville, yes, thank you. So would you be willing to say a few words as a religious leader and introduce this woman's mother? She talks about, you know, her daughter's death. And so he talks about how important it is for religious leaders to stand against the sins of oppression and bigotry and racism, etc. How he finds inspiration from the Black Lives Matter movement and the women's rights movements, the Women's March. And he finds inspiration in those things. Well, his church then turned around and said, we don't like the attention we're getting from your speaking at the VMAs. We felt like you took too hard of a stand. So, you know, we're uncomfortable with you having any sort of leadership in our church. And so they kind of asked him to tender his resignation, and he did. And he's like, I'm doing this I'm heartbroken over this. I'm sorry. And he basically said, I apologize for the unwanted attention you've received because of my stand. What he did not do was apologize for the stand he took, though. Mm. And that I really appreciate.
Yeah.
The thing that I appreciate the most is how kindly he spoke of his church, though. He's like, I don't hate them. I love them. These are good people. I know they're well-meaning. I am heartbroken that I have to leave. I do believe it's best for this community. He could have so easily been like, this church is trash. They are no longer a church. They don't believe in Christ, and I am kicking the dirt off my feet and moving on. Mm. Like, they're dead to me. He could have so easily done that. I could have been that person that was like, well, see ya. But he didn't. He loved them in a way that I don't know I would have been capable of doing.
Yeah.
In the very specific way that he was hurt, you know, saying, mm-hmm. you know, the thing you are called to, we don't believe you're doing well in that you've done it the best way right. you could have, you know, by speaking out against these sins.
Right.
Mm, we'd rather you didn't call out sin being a leader in the church. So could you just not? Like, that's so... I can't get over it.
Yeah.
But the way he's handled it has been so graceful, and I'm grateful for that example.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a really great example for how people handle those sorts of things. Is you don't have to stay. You definitely do not have to stay in an unhealthy, unsupportive environment. What could be an easy thing to fall into, though, is to then turn on that community and go, and you're the devil, F you. Right. I'm never, you know, it's easy to fall into that bitterness. It's, I forget what it was. Oh, like holding a grudge. I read this somewhere. I wish I remember where it was. Like, holding a grudge is taking your enemy's poison and drinking it willingly, knowing it's poison. Like, that's kind of he didn't do that. And I have imbibed in so much poison in my life that I have acquired a taste for it. I love me some grudge holding. And it's easy for me to do. It is important to recognize harmful communities you've been a part of, though,
mm-hmm.
and to know when it's time to leave.
Right.
So I think about that. You know, he did the most, you know, ethical, honorable, graceful thing he could have, having been wronged in the very specific way he has been. What do you guys think?
Yeah, no, I think that you're absolutely right, and it's sad and it's tragic. How often we hear things like that happening,
yeah.
right? And people just getting tossed out for doing the right thing. And I mean, maybe not even in the world, but I know we hear about it in churches all the time. People mm-hmm. taking a stand for what they think is right and what very often is a very right choice. And then they get booted by their community because
yep.
their community doesn't agree. And, you know, it's an impossible situation to be in. And mm-hmm. again, you know, it's something that we've all lived in a lot of ways. But at the end of the day, it's who are you choosing to be in that community? Who do you feel that you've been called to be? Who is it that God
right.
has created you to be in that community? And so, you know, it really boils down to, like, we live in a really horrible world, as we were getting into earlier, and you make the choices that you have to to live in that, mm-hmm. ultimately.
Yep. You guys pretty much said it. So, we want to hear your... We've covered a lot of ground today.
Yeah, we really went from one end of the spectrum all the way over to another. From whether Stitch was a snitch all the way to unhealthy communities.
Yep.
We covered some ground. We want to hear you guys' feedback, though. We want to hear... There's a couple different things we can talk about, so hit us back with these. We want to hear about con experiences. So, like, do you guys have a favorite con that you go to? Is it Wizard World? Is it Chicago Comic Con? Is it Gen Con? Is it Wizard... Or is it... I already said Wizard World.
Wizard World? Is it Wizard World? We want to know if it's Wizard
Chicago,
World.
Wizard World San Francisco. Are they better? We want to... Again, if you guys are in a community that is troubling you, or if it's something that you're struggling with, send us an email. We can pray with you. We can talk to you. We can try to guide you. If we don't have something, we can try to direct you to someone who might.
Yeah,
we
definitely.
Can give you guys resources to do that. That you can do that at minmaxpod@gmail.com. I won't abuse you guys with the litany of other things that you can find us on. Show notes for this episode, bit.ly/minmaxpod. Look for episode 16. Mm-hmm. And we also have one little bit of housekeeping to wrap this thing up. Next week, we are going to be taking a week off. It's the first one we've done. We're taking a little bit of a break. We've got some cool things in the works, though. Ashley, do you want to fill in just a little bit on that?
Yeah. So we have actually been asked to be a part of what would be like a new updated Pathios, which if you guys follow theology blogs at all, pathios.com is a giant blog community of faith-based blogs, regardless of what faith community you're from. This other website, let me just look it up real quick because I want to make sure that I get their URL correct. You can find them on Facebook. It's called Theology Corner. Their website is going to be launching September 15th, but we are asked to be a part of this great community of other faith-based podcasts and other Christian blogs. So we're one of two podcasts from what I've seen so far, but it's it looks like a pretty cool community. A lot of people that are similar to us that like to be talking about, you know, difficult questions, deep questions, answering a lot of different types of perspectives on Christian theology specifically. And they, like I said, their website will be launched September 15th, but they do have a Facebook currently. So if you want to find them at Theology Corner, you can find them at Theology Corner on Facebook.
And the URL is theologycorner.net. The site is up. I just checked the Googles.
Oh, okay.
And it looks like they're not publishing content yet. So
yeah, officially launching September 15th. But it's a really good resource, I think, for a lot of people to get started. If you haven't read any theology at all, it might be a great way to get your feet wet. They're going to have a lot of other podcasts and blogs and such. So be checking that out.
So yeah, we just got to do a little bit of back end work to get our episodes and show notes and everything over there. You don't have to change anything with your subscriptions. That's all going to stay put. This is going to be another avenue where our podcast is being
advertised. To get some more listeners. We're also in the process of lining up some more guests. A lot of you liked when Dr. Rob Wallace was on the podcast. So we are trying to do that more often by having, and you know, people loved Ashley Fry, and we had, you know, we're going to be doing some more D&D demos for those of you who enjoy those, getting some more DMs. So if you're a DM and you would like to DM for us on a D&D demo, please let us know. We'd love to have you. Mm-hmm. We'd love to get as many different DMs as possible, but also wanting to invite more people to be interviewed by us on their specific area of expertise, whether it's in the nerd world or in the theology world, or I know there's an episode we're going to be talking about mental health. So we're going to be having someone that is specifically working in the family therapy counseling world to be talking to us about that. So be looking forward to that. We are doing a lot of work on the podcast, but we just can't record that week. So it's going to be a week behind.
Yep. So it's not that we're not, actually, we're not just taking a break. We're doing actually a lot of back-end work.
Right.
So there's actually work still going on. It's just we need to take 1 week off for scheduling reasons. Kyle's going to be out of town, and we just got some things going on. So, yeah, just wanted to give you guys that note. So we will see you in 2 weeks.
Farewell.
Goodbye, people.
Goodbye.
Miss us.
Farewell. Auf Wiedersehen.